Hello, and welcome to the Inside of Views podcast for January the 14th, 2022. This is episode number 93. On today's show, we'll discuss the Tesla Cybertruck reportedly being delayed until 2023. Subaru reveals a couple of electric STI concept vehicles, and VinFast is building a factory in the U.S. I'm Dominic Chioni, Inside EV's forum moderator and Inside EV's editor. Joining us today is the Apollonian Tom Malogny, Inside EV's editor and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have the mighty Mr. Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, which is available on all the best podcast platforms. And of course, Kyle Connor joins us with Jordan from the majestic, practically palatial new halls of the Out of Spec Studios. So he also puts together resplendent videos for the Inside EV's YouTube channel. So, okay, before we get going, I'd like to ask that you please subscribe to the show. If you're watching us on YouTube, please hit that thumbs up button and ring that bell icon for notifications. And if you're watching us on Twitch, you can also ring that bell icon for notifications. All right, so with that out of the way, welcome everybody. Good morning.
Morning.
All right. Morning. So, We're going to get to what we've been driving this week in a moment, but we're actually going to start with something new called Comment of the Week. So, so this being the first time that we're doing this, the comment's not a serious one, but going forward, it could be. That's up to you all. So this week's Comment of the Week, or Kotwa for short, is...
Now this is a comment from last week's show.
Yes, sir.
Every week we're going to look at all the comments from the previous week and pick one to be the comment of the week. It could be, you could be criticizing us, you could be complimenting us, it could be anything, but whatever comment catches our eye, we're going to pick one of them.
Yeah, that could be in the chat here on YouTube chat or the Twitch chat, or it could be after the show, in the regular YouTube comment section, or if you hit us up on Twitter, you never know where we'll strike. So this week's comment of the week is from Cicero Holmes, who last week in our live chat said to Doc Tattoo, "Martin is still too hot. I mean, look at him. He's ready for the runway."
So, what was I doing last week? What?
So I believe in this case, Cicero was referring to a fashion show runway and not like an airport runway. But
yeah, yes. But obviously Sarah's blind.
How dare you?
I don't know. I agree, because I think Martin is hot and he should probably become a electric car YouTuber. He could be like a cross between Bjorn Nyland and Derek Zoolander, you know?
This would be a great thing if you started to do video, Martin.
I know. Well, you know what? I like you guys have been telling me for the last 3 years of me doing my podcast, 4 years of doing my podcast. So it will start next week.
Really?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
How will we find your videos? Where will they be?
It's my fourth anniversary of EV News Daily on Tuesday, the 18th. 4 years ago, I made a 6-minute podcast of the day's news, and now my podcasts are like 25 minutes, 30 minutes long, as my long-suffering listeners will know. There is a YouTube channel called EV News Daily that is rather quiet right now, but on Tuesday, it's got 6,000 subscribers, but from their daily videos from Tuesday, to celebrate the fourth anniversary of one or two people listening to what I have to say about EVs for the last 4 years.
Well, I'm one of them, but my commute's short now, so I only get the first 5 minutes of the show.
Well, that's good. I have a solution for people like you, but I can't announce it till Tuesday.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll get the answer soon.
All right.
Okay. Well, but anyway, but I'm flattered. Obviously this person is blind, but from this week we will take question of the week more seriously and pick out ones that are insightful and entertaining and less
just like this show, right? That's what people come here for.
Absolutely. Right? That's what they tell us.
It's not fair that somebody that has such a golden voice also looks as handsome as Martin. He's
right?
The complete package.
In spite of being a ginger and everything,
can you tell my wife that I deserve far more appreciation than I get, my long suffering wife as well. But right. There we go.
Hey, so let's get into what we've been driving. Let's start with actually Martin, who's back driving his Renault Zoe this week because his recently acquired MG ZS or ZS, depending on what country you're in, I understand started doing an impression of a swimming pool.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's in the garage. So
now,
Martin,
I do live by the sea in a town called Poole. I can't see the water from where I am. Not one of the lucky rich ones, but I have been boating this week. Now, I didn't get this picture ready to show on screen, so I'll just have to show on my phone, and it probably won't work very well. But okay. Yes, my MG ZS EV is in because the car started filling up, and that's before it got worse. That is obviously the footwell, and it just started filling up. And then the two passenger and driver footwells, that's the way the spare tire would go, not that it comes with a spare tire. That's the boot, so the trunk filled up, and then the two footwells at the front filled up with water when it rained. It was both raining and I was driving it in the rain, so I don't know whether the water's coming down and then finding its way, or whether it's coming up because the thing has corroded from underneath. MG will tell me, I hope. It went back into Hendy MG, my local MG dealer. They're fantastic here in Poole. And it was great because I turned up and the lady on the service reception said, what have we got here? Investigation into water ingress. Okay, we'll have a look and let you know. I get the feeling that people leave sunroofs open or they leave windows open. And then, I said, well, right. Do you want to come and have a look? Because all their techs were busy. I said, well, why don't I show you and then you can explain to your... And she's like, okay, fine. So she went out and looked at the car, lifted the boot, and it's like a swimming pool. And she's like, oh... That's a bit worse than you made it sound. We'll get that fixed. So, yeah, I don't know why, but it was... So whether it's coming up or going down... Hey, look, it's a one-off. Maybe these cars suffer from this. I'm very relaxed about it. All cars have problems. This one, of course, is 18 months old, made by SAIC. They're Chinese cars with the MG badge on. And we'll wait and see. We'll find out the reason why I'm boating rather than driving at the moment.
Right. So how you in liking the Renault Zoe?
Oh, so I'm back in the Zoe, and it's great because this is our second Zoe, the ZE40. This is the one with the 41 kilowatt hour battery pack in a tiny little city car. So it goes forever, and okay. I've just loved bombing around town. So I guess, Kyle, it's like when you get back in your smart car. It's like, oh, I'd forgotten how much fun small. Fun little cars are. So I've absolutely loved it. Apart from the fact that I've had to put the child seat in the back, and my 3-year-old keeps kicking me in the back and thinking it's hilarious. So that's not hilarious. First world problems, I know.
So that's a 40 kilowatt hour battery. That's like 150 miles of range?
Oh, no. It depends what time of year. It really suffers. It's a LG pack, I think they put okay. I think. It really suffers.
Active cooling or heating? Or
hot air. So not liquid thermal management, but...
okay.
The blowers blow. The battery's mainly under the rear seats, and it uses the HVAC system to blow hot air across the pack and cool it as well. But, yeah, I mean, in the summer, 215 miles, 220 miles, and that's, you know, that's driving nice. Around town even more. In the winter, it'll show like 130, 135. It really suffers.
Wow, that's incredible. Okay, so Kyle and Jordan... Good morning. So I believe you guys have been driving. You haven't been driving like regular cars like you usually do every week.
Have been, but they just haven't been electric.
Okay. And you're also in the new studios. So Out of Spec Studios got new digs, and you're there by the university. So you've been driving like a lot of e-mobility stuff this week, bicycles or scooters or something. So tell us about that. But first, tell us about this new space you got.
Yeah. So we have a growing... team. Everyone was like working remote, and I would say it was very convoluted, yep. Wouldn't you? So now we have forced everyone to come here all the time. They must sleep here. No one can leave.
And work-life balance.
Yeah, there is no life outside of work here. But we have this incredible view of the mountains. We're here at Colorado State University's sort of powerhouse energy campus. If you take a look here, this is our view right out the front. That's Long's Peak at 14,000 feet. We have full panorama mountain views everywhere. We were just enjoying the sunset here. Sunrise here. It's amazing. And essentially what had happened was our good friend Brian is actually a fan of this podcast and some of our other work. And he said, hey, you're in town. I run this building. Come take a look at it. Like just to see what they do here. We just like were just jaw dropped. Like some of the work that happens here, it's a lot of focus on decarbonization and sustainable energy generation. And then also these giant large scale diesel engine and gas turbines trying to convert them to have less emissions. So that means hydrogen being mixed in, for these large scale applications. So there's actually a hydrogen electrolyzer on site with a hydrogen fueling station. It's not commissioned yet, but I think it'll be the only hydrogen generation station in Colorado, or one of two. And so, yeah, basically it's all focused on everything that I'm interested in, which is efficiency and, you know, decarbonization, but also still, you know, remembering the fact we can't just put solar panels everywhere and make that work. So it's a really, I would say, realistic viewpoint of what the future of power will look like. And there was this awesome space here on the third floor for us. It's a huge space. And, you know, after a couple months of negotiating, we had to get approved from the town to be a private, you know, business here at the school. They let us here. And so the idea for this space is, obviously, our car reviews aren't going to stop. That's nothing's changing there. But we're starting to, you know, change things. Of course, first off, the audio in this room really is terrible, if you can't tell. So we're really going to put some sound deadening in this room. We gotta figure out the right solutions there. But we started a micro mobility outlet called Out of Spec Scoots. We're going to be doing EV or electric bike reviews. Jordan, maybe you can roll one over here and show everyone. I don't know, pull whichever one over there. We have a few here that are coming. I think we have over 30 on the way.
Oh, sweet.
So we'll do comparisons in a full, you know, channel based on micro mobility. Then we'll have a gaming channel here that Timon's going to do with simulation and, you know, looking at things like a set of Corsa and as they move along. So here comes Jordan with the Mac wheel. This is the MagiCycle. Non-step through, which is really cool. Took it out. We just built it last night, but took it out for a cruise and it rips and it rides nice. It's got a gorgeous headlight, 500 watt continuous. I don't know the peak offhand.
Right.
750 watt peak. It's pretty good.
Right on. So that's what you've been driving. That's like just, have you been driving other stuff as well this week? Like other bicycles or something?
Yeah, a lot of bicycles. We should perhaps maybe spend some more time preparing, because I don't really remember the names to them. I'm not really doing the reviews on them.
Right.
So, you know, we're just housing them out of here for some of our colleagues to do. But yeah, I'm going to commute on e-bike, hopefully starting when the weather gets a little bit nicer, because it's a 2.5 mile drive from my house, all on biking trails.
Oh, nice.
And actually, that's if I take the road bike path, but it's 4.5 miles if I take the river, like, actual biking path there.
I would take the actual biking path, because 4 miles, that's not very far on an electric bike. It's
literally
nice.
It'll take like 20, 30 minutes at most, something like that, I think.
Yeah. And it's like a good light workout or whatever.
Yeah, I could use something like that. But I've just been riding them on the throttle because... Yeah. Anyway, we took them all to lunch yesterday. We all hopped on them and scooted, because we're right downtown. We just scooted on down to lunch. And yeah, it's really cool.
Right on. Awesome. So look forward to seeing more about the scoot. I sent you that Instagram photo yesterday of from Works Electric. It's a like small one, probably just a couple people, I think, working in maybe in a garage. I don't even know now. But they make the hottest scooters. Like, he matches up like super advanced battery packs with like motors and controllers. So he's got like 1,000 watts and like a stand-up scooter. It goes like 50 miles an hour.
That's all us. We want that one.
We need to check that out. Anyway, I love that. Like I make some really great stuff. Anyway, so I like talking about it. But
yeah,
so,
and really just the rest of the space is going to be used as editing and workflow. So we'll have our editors here every day. Now, finally, we don't have to do all these file transfers and things get confused. We, you know, we have to produce, what, 53 videos per week is what we planned out. Yeah. So we need the system to churn everything through.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, that's ambitious. Right on. All right. So Tom, so this week you got to spend some time with the Ford F-150 Lightning. Now, you weren't driving it so much, but I believe you put out a video. It's on the Inside EVs website and on the Inside EVs YouTube channel, I believe.
On State of Charge.
State of Charge. All right. Yeah. It's on Tom Loggy's State of Charge. You can find that there. And I think I've put it in the Inside EVs forum in the Ford F-150 Lightning sub forum. So tell us about charging the Ford F-150 Lightning.
Yeah, so I actually didn't spend time with it this week. Some of the clips in the video with me with the truck was when I visited Ford back a few months back and drove in the vehicle and checked it out. But, you know, a lot of times I a lot of my videos are reactionary. When people ping me on Twitter or whatever and say, hey, Tom, could you tell us this? Recently, now that Ford has opened up Lightning ordering, I'm getting a lot of people saying, hey, Tom, I ordered my Lightning. Can you maybe put out a video explaining charging the F-150 Lightning? So that's what I did. I did a deep dive. It's like 40 minutes long, 45 minutes long. It really kind of starts at ground zero. The beginning, I go really slowly. So if you understand EVs, you could probably skip the first 10 minutes of it because I talk about level one, level two, DC fast charging, just basics. Because you got to understand, Ford says that 79% of their reservation holders for the F-150 Lightning have never owned an electric vehicle before. Right. So they're walking into this. They don't know anything about level one, level two, DC fast. So I went really slowly, kind of explained everything, and it took off really well. I got a lot of Ford representatives reached out to me, said they love the video. I had a few Ford dealerships say, we're using it to train our sales staff. We're making them watch it. Ford CEO Mike Levine liked it on Twitter. So, you know, it went over pretty good. And so Ford reached out to me and said, look, that video was pretty good. We like what you did there. Is there anything else we could help you with? So I said, well, a lot of people now are asking about the Ford Intelligent Backup Power System. Right. So can I speak to somebody about that? So we set that up for today. So I'm going to have a nice long interview, put out a tweet asking people if you have any questions about that system. Put them in the comment section of my tweet on that on Twitter. So if anybody here has any questions about that, go to my Twitter account and ask the questions, because I'm going to ask them all the questions that are sent to me. Then I'm going to do like kind of a wrap-up video and go over all that. So Kyle, I see you're raising your hand like a good student. What question do you have?
So we had a vehicle with this capability on it, because it's nothing new, by the way, this backup power situation. They've had vehicle, it on F-150 hybrid for a year now.
So Kyle, 1 second. I'm talking about intelligent backup where the vehicle powers your whole house.
Not, I'm sorry. Not, but not, can you ask this question for me about the vehicle-to-vehicle charging then?
Yeah.
Because the backup's through the charging port. But exactly, the vehicle-to-vehicle charging is not through the charging port.
No, it's through
port.
The regular 240 volt outlet in the bed.
Right. So we had this technology on a truck that we tested a year ago. Whatever inverters were burnt out or something, like it wouldn't fire. It said there was a grounding issue in the particular truck we had. Why is it they are just now saying you can use this technology to charge another electric car? Because we've seen other people do this a year ago, and now everyone's like, this is new news. You can charge another EV, but it's like, yeah, we did this like a while ago.
You've been able to do that with the F-150s for a while.
Yeah, so can you ask them what the reasoning was to, I guess, was it just for the story, or is it now rated for continuous load? Right. I'm curious what's changed.
Exactly. I will ask. Well, so is there anything different? We know the trucks have had this capability for a while, and now you're talking about it. So is there anything different that it offers now? So
that's all I've been curious about. It's kept me up at night. I'm like, why are they just now saying you can do this? I don't get it.
Yeah. I my guess is going to be that there's nothing different. It's just that now that the Lightning's launching, now they're talking about charging electric vehicles. So, you know, we'll see, but I will ask them. I'll put that on my list today. But please, like I said, put your questions on my Twitter feed, not here on Inside Views. I don't want to have 10 different places to try to find where people are asking me questions. If I'm going to read down my feed, write all the questions down, and then go. Yeah, the one real big question, you see what Bryce asks is, why does it require 320 amp service? Now, on Ford's website, it says that if you want to use Ford Intelligent Backup Power, your home has to have a 320 amp service. Now, that's crazy. Almost no homes have that. Like, most homes have at most a 200 amp service. I mean, there's a lot of homes in the U.S. that have 100 amp service if they're older homes, particularly in the Midwest area. But then 150 became common for a while. Now 200 amps is the standard. But if that's correct, I'm hoping it's like a misprint on Ford's website. If that's correct, it's going to be really difficult to have this. You're going to have to do a service upgrade. Then you're going to have to buy the transfer switch. Then you're going to have everything installed. It could be like a $12,000 additional cost to be able to use this. And, you know, at that point, you could buy a Powerwall. So I'm going to try to get all the information here and see exactly what all the questions are and get everything answered.
Right on. And that's your Twitter handle is at Tomolog. That's TOMMOLOG. Is this So if anyone's listening on audio, that's where you can find Tom on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a whole lot to that that installation. So I think Ford is, you know, managing that through another company. Is that
Sunrun is the partner that Ford partnered with to install the intelligent backup system. You have to have they're going to sell you the inverter and install, and they're also going to install the Ford Charge Station Pro, which is Ford's 80 amp charging station that's required. So you need the Ford Station Pro. Now that comes free with Lightning that have the extended range battery pack. So they throw in the 80 amp charging station, whether or not you're going to use it for intelligent backup power.
Which
you can
awesome.
Just use it to charge your car, but it's awesome. But now don't forget, you need a 100 amp dedicated circuit just for that.
Right. Take full advantage of it.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, that's going to be a limiting factor for a lot of people also. And I also had a lot of people ask me, you know, is Ford going to sell the 80 amp charge station? I'm going to get the standard range battery pack, but I want to buy that station. My advice to you is don't even bother going through Ford. So many people are going to get their Lightnings with the extended range battery pack and get that thrown in for free. And they're not going to install it because they're not going to want to pay to install it, or their house can't have the capacity. So just wait 6 or 8 months after Lightnings start getting delivered. You're going to see these things pop up on sale on the internet. Don't pay full price. You'll probably be able to get one at a reduced cost from someone that just has no use for it.
Right on. All right. So anyone else have any Ford backup questions? Nope. Okay. So I guess we'll move on to the news stories. Man, this could be a short week this week. There wasn't a whole lot of news, like, because CES was just like the previous week, and there was like all the cars that were going to be shown were shown until last night when Subaru had a big thing. But before we get to that, let's start with this. On our first show of the year, we talked about all the electric vehicles coming to showrooms in 2022. And although we used the Tesla Cybertruck on our thumbnail, we raised the point that there's a chance it might be delayed until 2023. Well, it's looking that might actually now be the case. According to a report from Reuters, the stainless steel truck will only begin shipping around March of 2023, or so, like over a year from now. Now, Reuters' source is an anonymous person familiar with the matter, so it's fine if you want to keep on believing. But and we'll have confirmation one way or another directly from the horse's mouth on January the 26th, when CEO Elon Musk will give us an updated product roadmap. So, Tom, you ran a poll on Twitter about the likelihood of Cybertruck deliveries happening this year, and promised a 40 amp home charging station to the person who guessed the closest date in 2022. So how confident are you that you're going to have to find another reason to give away one of these things?
It's not looking good for Cybertruck deliveries. Yeah. I did qualify that with that. If it's zero, nobody wins, because otherwise I would have to give out like 100 charging stations.
Right.
Although I might be able to at this point.
Right.
Because my garage is filling up quickly. I have like 6 or 7 in the hole that I haven't reviewed yet. And by the way, talking about reviews, I just finished my Electrify America home station charging station review. It's going to be up in a couple of days. That has been the most requested charging station for a review. I can't tell you how many people have asked me to review that. And so I took my time and I did it really thoroughly, because I know a lot of people want to know how well this is. So it's 50 minutes. It's the longest charging station review I've ever done, but I actually introduced a new test in my reviews, and it's super comprehensive. Look for that in a couple of days. And I don't think I'm going to have to give any away, Dom. It looks like zero. But one of the things that's interesting, and I mean, Twitter being Twitter, you can't get upset about it. I had so many people leave comments like, you know, you idiot, like, you know, why are the estimates so low? Because I had all of the estimates were like, you know, under 5,000 units. And yeah, you could see there that the highest guess was more than 1,500. So I had a lot of people say, that's so ridiculous. You know, they're going to deliver 20,000, 30,000. Someone said 120,000 Cybertrucks. But one person in particular whom I banned from, I blocked on Twitter, used a lot of choice words about me and said that, you know, they're going to deliver at least 50,000, and that, you know, I don't know how I conned Inside EVs into making me a senior editor. If I don't know anything about, I don't know anything about electric vehicles, if I don't think Tesla's going to deliver 50,000 of them in 2022. So I'm feeling solid about that, his estimate of 50,000 isn't going to happen.
Right. I think, I put my money on you when it comes to stuff like that. So the reasons for the delay, I believe, are just, well, who knows for sure, but no doubt there a lot of the changes that they've made, like just recently they decided to make it rear steering and four motors instead of three motors for the, you know, the top version of it. I don't know. Kyle, what do you think?
I think it's just an anonymous source saying something that we can't verify.
Right. That's understandable. I understand the skepticism behind that, and it makes sense. But I do have faith that Reuters is not going to publish that something unless they have some, like, you know, confidence in the sources.
It's possible there's confidence in that one source today. But at Tesla, things go from this end to this end in a matter of 2 weeks. I mean, it's such a nimble company compared to any other automaker. They won't even remember what they said 2 weeks ago, and they'll just say, "Oh yeah, we're doing it right now." So, you know, at the end of the day, I think there's a lot of opportunity still to see Cybertruck this year. I don't know. I really don't care. I have no interest in buying one, but I just, you know, I hope they come as soon as possible. I know there's a lot of people waiting on them. I hope the quality is good. I hope they drive well, and I can't wait to review it as soon as possible. And that's really it from my side. It's like, as soon as we can get one, then we're going to do all the testing. And whenever that happens, we'll be pushing hard to be one of the first reviewing it.
So you're saying there's a chance?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Why not? Of course there's a chance. Of course there is. I don't know. Okay. I don't know how to judge these things. I mean, at the end of the day, I'm not at the factory every day. I'm not in the internal conversations. They can hand build as many, you know, they could probably hand build 500-600 of these things, relatively easily. So,
yeah, before the end of the year.
It's hard to say.
Right. They did get a couple. We had an article on Inside EVs. They did get a couple more like big presses at the Cyberfactory, the Gigafactory in Austin, which is like looking great, by the way. It's like, if you look at there's lots of drone flyover videos of the factory, and you can see it's pretty much ready to go.
I think if we look at the last Tesla vehicles that have come to market, Model Y and then Shanghai Model 3, we've seen very long timing estimates early on. And then, oh, by the way, actually it's here. We're ready to go.
Right.
And we've seen that Model Y came 6 months early, if not more.
Right.
Shanghai was incredibly fast and incredibly high quality out of the factory. I'm not really one to doubt Tesla at this stage. And honestly, I don't think it really matters when they start production on these things, because they're, you know, at the end of the day, they're going to sell every single one they can make. It's just when is it easiest for them to start? I think it's interesting if you look at the Tesla order books right now for their existing models, because I'm sort of in the market for my next car in sort of an immediate need. You guys know I really want Taycan, of course. This is going to come towards the end of the year, maybe even early next year, just because there's some options. But I think I need something in the interim. And so was looking at Model S, looking at Model Y, looking at, of course, other automakers. And like 3 and Y have incredibly long delivery timing estimates. But then you go and order a Model S Plaid, and it's like, oh, that'll be there in 2 weeks. And then, oh, by the way, there's actually some right down the street from you just sitting on the lot waiting with a discount. Right. So, it's kind of weird how I think they've maybe built too many S's at this time for the demand for that car.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think they're priced incredibly well. I think it's a steal for the value that you get, especially with Plaid. And a lot of people are like, well, you spend 130 grand on a car, but I think your overall cost is going to be the same as a dual motor, because they'll kind of depreciate at the same value. So I don't really think you're losing anything by going with a Plaid, in my opinion. You just got to front load the money. At the end of the day, Cybertruck, what do you think, Jordan? Will we see it this year?
I don't know. The issue with that, like, why it came out early, because they already had all the development pretty much done and ready. I mean, it wasn't like breaking new technology. They reconfigured the underlying chassis over the 3 to make it more simple and easy to manufacture. Mm. But the Cybertruck is such a new concept, even to Tesla, and that's not even like what they were originally envisioning. So they're like catching up with the promise that they made. They're still figuring out how they're actually going to make the steel and finalize how it's actually pressed. And I think it's a brilliant truck. Like, I can't wait to see it. I would love to own one. I'm one of the weirdos that thinks it looks awesome.
If you buy one, I don't have to.
Exactly. But yeah, it's delayed because I think genuinely Tesla is still figuring out how to do it.
Right on. You don't have a reservation, do you, Jordan?
Nope.
Nope. Okay. Right on.
It won't matter either. You'll be able just to walk in and get one. We've learned reservations make zero difference with legacy, with new. I hate the word legacy, but with any of them. I remember early Model 3 days, people would just like, a car would show up, cancel. Like, if you just happen to be at the store, they'd be like, oh, you want this one? Here you go.
Right on. Yeah, so I don't know. I think it's going to be next year. And I've been, you know, Team Zero 2022 for a while, just because it's such a, you know, like a new product and learning how to make it. And then now changing exactly like the whole drivetrain, basically, and then adding like features like Crab Walk. And I mean, this is just a lot of stuff.
Will it use Crab Walk or is it just rear steer?
It's Crab Walk. They're doing Crab Walk. Yeah.
Wow. They said walk like a crab.
Yeah, walk like a crab, right? Just like, and then also tank walk. Turn, like Rivian's supposed to be able to do at some point.
Okay, but these are the things they're just saying. We don't know when it'll actually come.
Right, right, and we'll find out more about that on the 26th during that. So that'll be the with the financials.
The quarterly earnings call. But Elon missed one. Right. Is now back to do a product roadmap update, which he did last year to talk about the Model S and Model X, and you know that's. They've got form on doing that. So, wait and see. Like, there are signs in that, first of all, they took the pricing off the website because it was going to be $39, $49, or $69 for single, dual, or tri-motor.
Right.
Then, in December, they took off coming in 2022. So, they have kind of been backing away. And then there's weird stuff, like Elon Musk tweeting, oh, yeah, it's going to walk like a crab, and it's, you know, all of a sudden you're adding in rear-wheel steering, which is not the work of a moment. And that, as one of our comments said a moment ago, that makes you think, well, maybe the vehicle isn't as fully baked as it should be at this stage. Because, you know, hey, it's going to have a new paint color. Yeah, easy peasy. Like the paint tech, the paint shop they're buying in for Berlin, I forget their external supplier they're buying that from, but the digital paint shop they're bringing in, wonderful. Let's add some new colors. They can do that. And again, with their supplier for the big presses, there's the £6,000 press for Model Y. There's the 8,000, I think it's 8,000 one for Cybertruck from Idra. Again, a supplier that is providing some fantastic equipment there that can make these vehicles. But adding in rear wheel steering, not the work of a moment. And then Elon tweeting, top one's going to have a quad motor now.
Right.
And like the weird thing is,
that's all re-engineering everything. Yeah, you know?
There's two sides of it. Those that care about these things think that it's increasingly looking Mickey Mouse. Like, oh, we're going to add this, we'll add this. Like, at this stage, if you know how a car is made, the product cycle, if a car is about to be launched, you don't start saying, oh, we're going to add this feature, because that's baked in months and years ago before validation, and they'll start prototyping. And if you care about these things, it's looking increasingly like their reputation's taking a hit. But does the normal person really care if Cybertruck comes this year, next year, or never? Not really. Does the normal person care if Roadster ever arrives? I'm still in it's never arriving camp. I know you hate me saying that. That's never arriving. Not at the specs they said, at the pricing and the specs they said. But, you know, they've already said, look, you can't get a Cybertruck for $39 anymore. And it was never, you know, like, it. Does anyone care? Does it matter? No, not really. We all get interested and some people get worked up about it.
Right.
Like, and what people hate me saying as well is the Tesla fans. They've made one good they've made two good products. One of the products they made was the factories, the facilities. They are incredible at doing that. Now, admittedly, they've only opened up China because Texas and Berlin aren't actually open. But they will be soon. It'll be fine. They are so good at that part of engineering. And they've made a Model 3.
And supercharger network.
Not particularly hard to do, just expensive.
I don't know.
Not particularly hard to do, just a huge capital investment. But they've made one really good product, the Model 3. They made it a little bit bigger, the Model Y. Not that hard to make a Model Y out of a Model 3. Even the seats. Like, oh, just stick some rails down there and plonk the seats on top. You'll be good, mate. Off you go. Like, it's not even an elegant version. They've made one good mainstream car. And I don't think they're done with making it yet. I think they need to spend 2022 getting better at making threes and Ys in all the places they make them and screw everything else. Like, who cares about everything else? If Like, I mean, that's just bread and butter. Better. Yeah. Just get better at making those two cars. Model S, I mean, fabulous, as Kyle says. Model X, out of this world, great car, engineering-wise. But otherwise, they're such afterthoughts in the balance sheet in terms of we want to see that company succeed because it forces an entire industry into electrification. If it wasn't for Tesla, we wouldn't be where we are today. So we need Tesla to win and to succeed and make great cars. And I think they should spend this year just getting a little bit better. Just, you know, doing a Toyota. Just being 1% better every day on doing what they do. Now, that's not what gets people excited or frothy or they want to hear about the next greatest thing. Right. But ignore all those, you know, those bloggers and YouTubers that are making all these shows about, oh, you know, Tesla are about to do this and they're going to the moon and the share price is going to be this. Ignore all that. If they can make their great cars just a little bit better, iterate on them, all the technologies going in. Look at, I haven't looked as far down the show notes, but there's a situation in Canada, that minus 30 Celsius, where the heat pumps aren't working. And I think it's partly to do with the...
It's not on our show notes, so go ahead and say it.
Like there's several reasons. Some sensors are failing. There's some flaps on the front which are being stuck open or stuck closed. Look, it's minus 30 Celsius, so stuff is not normal. And like Tesla already have a team in Canada working on it with a team in Fremont. They're pushing out over-the-air updates. They're doing preventative. They're working out who's got cars in these locations and doing preventative fixes. And I think the over-the-air update is so that the sensor ignores a stuck flap and will not let their occupants not have heat and freeze at minus 30. It's a very serious safety issue. Like if the other car companies are doing that, we don't hear about that kind of. That's been maybe a week since that story broke, and I think they're close to fixing it. That kind of stuff is amazing. I want to see Tesla do more of that and just be better at what they do. Who really cares? Unless you've got a Cybertruck order, in which case you do care, and I'm sorry for you.
Yeah, I think, but like you said, it's like a 6 months delay is, I think it was what it kind of adds up to. In the grand scheme of things, it's not really a big deal. I mean, they have like over a million pre-orders and, like, who knows how many of those will pan out to actual orders. But, you know, as the thing starts being made and shipped, they'll get more, you know, those orders don't stop coming in. So I think they'll make as many as they'll sell as many as they can make for years at this point. So, yeah, we just really want to see it get it going. But, you know, the sooner the better. But like you said, I don't see how they're going to do it this year.
Yeah, but Martin's right in the way that he suggests that we approach Tesla, because over the last 8 years, I've had these up and down, positive, negative, lots of emotion about Tesla.
You worked for them.
And then at the end of the day, when I just ignore what everyone's saying, and then I get in my Model 3 or I get in the new Model S Plaid, which I just drove the other day, I'm like, wow, these are great. And like, how could you not love something that's this fast? And like, sure, it's not great at everything. I don't think there, in my eyes, there's ever a one car that can do everything, right? I like segmented cars for their things. But a Model S Plaid is like the best muscle car ever. And like, that's the coolest thing on the planet to me. So yeah, totally. Yeah, have to just remember where, you know, not get caught up in all the daily annoyances with Tesla fans or haters, because both sides can be very toxic. But just kind of be like, this is a really good car, and they're going to make really good cars going forwards. And whenever they do it is when they do it.
So at this product update, you know what? I'll just throw this out there now. I think they're going to, speaking about great new products, I think they're going to announce a new product, a Chinese designed and built more affordable vehicle, maybe a hatch or something. So I've heard that there were some rumors. I think we had something on Inside EVs about that this week. I'm not sure, or maybe that was just something on Twitter. I'm not sure, but yeah, I think that's. I think they're working up to that, and that's going to come up. I'll bet a donut on that. If anyone wants to make a donut bet,
we will gladly accept your donut. Thank you very much.
Yes, I'd love your donuts. Send them over.
If they unveil another vehicle, then that'll mean we have what, 4 in production and 5 that are just. Out there.
I don't think they need another one, but we should talk about really quickly. I don't know if it's in the show notes. Mega chargers are being installed.
No, that's not in the show notes.
We may have talked about it on the previous show, but
no, I don't think we did.
I believe it was Pepsi, or
Frito-Lay.
They're taking delivery of a few semis.
Right.
Yep. This month, right? They're taking some semis this month. They have a power pack energy buffer storage situations. I don't know if we wrote it up. I saw it on Electric's site, and they did a great job explaining how the power packs are the buffer between the grid. They even had some on trailers backed up to the charging sites as temporary grid buffer. You have to imagine if you're going to plug in a megawatt and then you're going to plug in another megawatt and you just like crank these on at the same time. Well, that puts a massive load on the grid. This is one of the problems with DC charging and why it can be so expensive, but also quite dirty in a sense for charging because you got to fire up all these peaker plants. But these grid buffers, these on-site battery buffers are the solution to that problem. It's an expensive one, but it's a solution. And they already have it installed. It's like they have the ultimate charging station going in that the world has ever seen.
Right.
Well, Electrify America has these buffers at, we just did an article recently, I forgot, I think 130 of their locations, they have on-site energy storage as buffers so that they, you know, don't stress the grid too much and don't have to pay extraordinary demand charges.
Yeah, it's awesome. We've seen those for a while. They buy them from Tesla. They're branded as Tesla, I believe, too. And you'll see them at the sites from time to time. But Tom, I think this is just the next level in terms of how much buffer they had. They had trucks full of batteries and in-ground. I'm not talking about one little thing like an EA station. These are like, this has got to be like 5 megawatt hours. I don't know, it's a ton.
It's got to be when you think about it. Right. I mean, just think of the average Electrify America site. Let's say it's because their average site is 4 stations. There's usually 3 that are 150 kilowatt and 1 that's 350 kilowatt. So even if you match, well, at least, it's different no matter where you go. Here on where we are, only one of my local sites has 2 350. The rest of them are all just a single.
I've never even seen a single 350 before. That's wild.
Oh, they're all around here, and some of the sites around here don't have any 350s. They're just 150s.
Yeah, I've seen that for off-highway charging.
I mean, let's just go by that model. If there's one 350 and 3 150s, you know, that's, you know, less than 1 megawatt charger. And on these, the Frito-Lay, let's say, like you said, Kelsey, they have 4 or 5 of them lined up. I mean, this could be the equivalent of, like, you know, 10 Electrify America sites all just on one location. So yeah, they need tremendous amount of buffering if they're going to not just overtax the grid. And could you imagine the demand charges on that? You know, they plug in 5 trucks at once. I mean, their electricity bill would be over $100,000, $150,000 a month.
I mean, if they have enough storage, though, they can even do some, you know, grid servicing, like, you know, I forget what to call it. But to make some extra, you know,
absolutely
income, another revenue stream from the utility.
Once you front the money on a buffer situation, and then you calculate how much degradation you'll have over the life of using that storage system, then you know exactly how much you want to take in and put out over the life of that, you know, expected installation. And what's cool is a lot of that work is actually being done, those calculations, in the building we're in.
Right.
We have a giant battery bank below this building. They're doing all this testing. It's awesome. So hopefully we can share more about, like, the actual costing. But degradation plays a big role in this as well over, you know, a 20, 30-year installation.
For sure. Awesome. Well, I'm really looking forward to hearing more about this, about the Semi, actually, as much or more than the Cybertruck, because, I mean, the Cybertruck's exciting and everything, but, you know, Semi is, could be, like, such a great thing because, you know, you'll see them everywhere. Hopefully, eventually, they get, the production going. And,
That comment from Jan at eMobility Norway about the megawatt charging system, that's the great unknown that we don't know about the Semi truck. Will it use the industry standard plug, which we don't know what that is yet, or will Tesla go for their proprietary connector again? And we hope they don't. I hope they don't, because simplicity wins.
Right.
Yeah, but does it matter as much as passenger cars?
No, it doesn't.
Yeah. Because at that point, like, companies are just going to say, we're going to buy all Semis or all Freightliner, eCascadias, or whatever it's going to be, and they'll spend the money to put in the infrastructure that's needed.
That's a good shout. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Right. All right, so let's move on to something else. Anything else? Any other Tesla things we want to talk about?
We hit 102,000 miles on the Model 3 now. We haven't mentioned it yet, but we're going to do a huge 100,000 mile. We're already planning it. a huge 100,000-mile series on that car, looking at battery degradation, componentry, how well it's held up, because we've treated it like a normal car. The dogs have run around it muddy, and it has the white seats, so it's a really good long-term test. But we do have some damage and some things I need to fix first. My roof panel cracked the other day, so it's starting to spider out, and it's making like four different rattles.
So you had some... You had a little video too, I think, on YouTube, where there's something going on with this gear selector, possibly. I'm not really sure. I couldn't tell what was going on in the video.
Yeah, Alyssa was driving it, and the every time we hit a bump, it shows like parking brake failure, and then like occasionally it's fine for like 2 days, and then it goes crazy, and it affects regen and auto hold. And but this was the first time we experienced the behavior where when every time the car would stop, it would put itself in park. And you put it back in drive, and it would put itself back in park. And so she sent the video, and so she has to time putting it in drive and hitting the throttle right at the time to get it moving before it can put itself back in park. So yeah, it's going to go in for service. I mean, that was really it. At the end of the day, I don't mind the warnings popping up. Sure. We took it to Vegas last week for CES, and the whole way there, we couldn't use autopilot because every time we hit a bump, it would freak out. But then the whole way back, it was fine.
It fixed itself. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. And that video is actually going to be up on Out of Spec Motoring today. And maybe it fixed itself even early on in the trip, if I remember correctly. But yeah, the car's got some weird oddities. We got to get it in, get it serviced, get it brought back to new. We'll present all the numbers. And it'll be a fun little series to see how well it's held up in 2 years and 100,000 miles.
Awesome. And that's going to be on Out of Spec Reviews.
Yeah, probably a mix of everything, just because certain channels have certain niches that'll cover for that car. I know it's a non-traditional YouTube case, but we'll eventually have an article on swerveautos.com that encompasses the whole thing.
Right on.
That's interesting, Kyle. I had a similar situation when I had my Mini E back 10 years ago. When we first got the cars, if you stopped at a red light and you kind of made maybe you didn't just glide to a casual stop, you stopped a little bit more abruptly, the car would just shut off. And you know, electric vehicles are so quiet, and this was everybody's first electric vehicle. So when it shut off, we didn't realize it. I mean, the lights on the dash were still on and everything, but the car was like off. So then the light turns green, you press the accelerator and you get nothing. And everybody just freaked out. Like, you know, the first couple times that happened, it was so like unsettling, but you had to calm down. You had to take it out of drive, put it in park, press the brake, stop, then start, and then put it in gear and go. So everybody learned how to do that. But it was the same type of thing that you're saying where, you know, it jumps out of gear. And it just hearing you say that just reminded me back
so
when I had
the
Mini
for that, Tom. Why did it do that? Because it's obviously different than what we're experiencing. But what was the case then?
Yeah, well, it was just some software glitch. And, you know, these cars were rushed. You know, BMW had to get them in customers' hands. It was a whole carb credit thing by a certain date. And, you know, they were working with AC Propulsion. AC Propulsion delivered the drive units for BMW, and then BMW had to connect their software and make it work. And so there was always most of the problems with the Mini E was communication issues between BMW software and AC Propulsion software. So like a few months after this happened or continued to happen, we all had to bring our cars in for like some kind of software update, and then it stopped happening. But couple of months, it was like, you know, every time you pulled up to a red light or a stop sign, you had to check to see if the car was on. You know, it was pretty funny.
Just Mini E things. But I will say I took the Tesla home last night from the office, and I got zero issues, not even one warning, used autopilot. Like, it's just so random. And I think it's just a loose sensor that if you just get it so it like wobbles around, they get locked back in place. That's what it feels like to me. It's probably... I wouldn't even say it's possible that it's caused by Tesla, because we just put new brakes on it. It's possible that we just didn't plug the parking brake back in all the way. It could be as simple as that. We just don't know.
Right on. Interesting. Well, we'll keep us up to speed on that. All right. So although we didn't have any EV reveals this week, Subaru surprised us last night by revealing not one, but two new STI concept vehicles ahead of the Tokyo Auto Salon 2022. That event sort of like a Japanese SEMA, with lots of aftermarket companies showing off stuff to customize your car or make it go faster. So one of those is the STI ERA concept. It's a concept model being developed, Subaru says, under STI's Near Future Motorsport Study project. The STI ERA Challenge project which is it launched with the aim of gathering experience with new technologies in the world of motorsports for the carbon neutral era. So all that to say, that's all that was on that press release. But I did some digging and I found more info on the Subaru Technica International, or STI, website, as well as a press release from Yamaha, which is supplying the motors for this project. So apparently, this is going to be interesting. This is not just like it looks pretty cool. Like if you watch this on YouTube or Twitch, you can see it now on the screen. This car, the STI E-RA concept, it looks pretty cool, but it's not just like a, it's an actual going, moving, operating vehicle, or it will be shortly, because they want to do some testing this year on Japanese circuits. And then they say the first goal of this model is to challenge the lap time of 400 seconds, at 6 minutes and 40 seconds, in a time attack at the Nürburgring circuit after 2023, or probably in 2023. So that's just a bit quicker than the fastest road car time, which was set by a Porsche 911 GT2 RS at 6:43:30, or the Neo EP9 actually is the quickest electric around the Nürburgring, I think. And that was 6 minutes and 45 seconds, I believe. Yeah, we could see this thing going fast. So this car will have a motor for each wheel and put out about 800 kilowatts or 1,088 horsepower, depending on how you do the calculation there. And it will have torque vectoring. The motors themselves have integrated inverters, and they are from Yamaha. No, Yamaha has been working on electric motors for cars and boats and everything. Yamaha is a huge company. They make all kinds of things. So the series up until recently was from small, like maybe 50 kilowatts to 200 kilowatts. And that's the size of the ones that are going to be in this one. But they also have a 350 kilowatt motor, which is even bigger, which works on an 800 volt system. So I'm not sure that could be what's in this. We're not positive yet. And so I'm looking forward to finding out whether this is like an 800 volt car. But the battery itself, though, that's in total only 60 kilowatt hours. So it's not a very huge battery. So they're not going to be doing laps and laps of the Nürburgring in it, but like a time attack kind of situation. So I don't know. I don't know if you want to talk about that. But
I think it's worth mentioning really quick just how awesome to see some enthusiasm from the Japanese over some electric stuff. Also, the fact that they took the time to engineer it, they took the time to make it work, is cooler than most concept cars that are powered by a microwave motor or a refrigerator motor, if you will, whatever it would be. So I'm pretty excited about it. What do you think it looks like, by the way? Do you think it looks good?
That looks fantastic. A lot of the comments are asking what the hood or the roof scoop is for if it's not internal combustion engine.
Cooling. Cooling, really, because that much power, needs a lot of cooling. Really, it does, and it looks cool.
Kyle, have you taken an EV on the Nürburgring?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, what is 60 kilowatt hours? People are saying it's small, but
two laps.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not a whole lot. You have time to warm up the batteries in the system with it, and then.
I mean, look, with the more grip you have, the more brakes you have, the more downforce you have, the more wide open throttle time you have. And the more wide open throttle time you have, the more you're chewing through your battery and the more heat loss you'll have. Because that's a one lap special right there. That's a gentle warm up, hot lap, and that's it.
Done.
Yep.
But the Solterra, on the other hand, oh no, those looks are
ugly.
Yeah. Can we just bring up the Solterra photo?
Yeah. I have a little thing about that. So the other STI concept is one that we might actually be able to buy at some point. This is the Solterra STI concept. All they say about it on the press release is that it features a roof spoiler, cherry red under spoilers, and other special parts on its exterior. The model inspires Subaru's superior driving dynamics. So there's not a whole lot of information there. My guess is that
the Lexus motors in this, though.
That's my guess. That they'll use the 400 horsepower version of the powertrain that the Lexus model gets.
Now we're
It's crazy. They keep forgetting to paint that front quarter panel. I don't know what the deal is.
Right?
Looks so bad.
They painted on the Mach-E. Toyota version of this.
I thought it was a Mach-E with a body kit at first when I looked at it.
Oh, yeah, the front. Yeah.
Front grille.
Oh, the GT, right? Yeah, it does have a similar grille inset as a Ford Mustang Mach-E GT.
And in that blue, I know it's not the same as Grabber Blue, but when I looked at it quickly, I'm like, God, who ruined the front of a Mach-E?
Yeah, it's definitely not the most attractive thing. But I think if you paint the plastics, it actually wouldn't be half bad.
Right. Yeah, man, there's got to be...
And then take this stupid red lipstick off the bottom.
Yes. Well, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, adding some red highlighting, as you can see from the what I'm wearing today, that's not going to make me run around the block any faster after the Christmas and New Year overindulgence. Like, this does not make me go faster. So,
but red on gray is not bad, but red on that shade of blue, man, I don't know. Yeah,
well,
I think
you probably get different colors. You probably get.
So I think the aftermarket. I think there's a lot of room for the aftermarket with this Solterra, especially if it comes up with an STI.
I totally disagree. Aftermarket only works if there's volume. I see no way this car having enough volume to justify an aftermarket seat.
If they have 400 horsepower version of it, it might be.
Yeah, I'll go buy a Model 3 Performance with almost 500 and smoke this thing.
You have a point. But the Model 3, I guess a good Model Y Performance, I guess, would be more in line with the crossover
size.
There's
so many better performance cars for the money, which I guess is not too dissimilar from STI stuff, right? But the thing with the STI is you get that flat four-cylinder, you get the very unique boxer engine sound, you get this sort of Colorado mountain vibe. This doesn't sound like I'm not going to see these things on every corner, I don't think, here in Colorado. What do you think, Jordan?
Yeah, it doesn't really fit the vibe. And it's funny with the STI, like for this, just the STI pink accents, that's literally all they did with the Subaru Forester. It's not the STI version. It's the Subaru Forester Sport. Just add some red trim around the bottom, and that's about it. And they got away with it. People buy them. But yeah, I don't see many of these in Colorado because it seems like everyone out here wants the normal gas-powered Subaru. I don't know. It's not quite.
We
the
are
market.
Like Subaru's territory here.
Right.
I think Vermont's like number one Subaru sales, and then it's us. And so like they're on every corner. Every parking lot's full of them. I'd be surprised if we even see like five of them.
On that note, though, we could end up having the most of them because we have so much Subaru brand loyalty. The people who want a performance EV might choose this even if it's less performing.
How could you go and buy an STI version of this over even a Mach-E GT?
I don't know.
But we'll have to drive it. Maybe it'll be magical.
Yeah, that's the unknown in the right. Markets that are really Subaru, you know, strongholds like Vermont, like Colorado. We don't know yet if the Subaru loyalists will go for the electric Subarus because most of those areas get really cold. And we know that the electric vehicles performance drops when it's cold, the range goes down. So will that translate well for Subaru in their hottest markets? That's really, you know, that's an unknown. We don't know that yet.
Right. Yeah, I think I'm just as excited about actually the race car as I am the Solterra STI. But yeah, I like that. The thing looks really nice. Yeah, if you're watching this on Martin's showing us the car again on YouTube or Twitch, and from the back, you know, it looks good from every angle. Look at the diffuser. That's like crazy.
I mean, it's just awesome. It's just a render, but still, it's right. Like someone sat down at the computer to do that rear spoiler, and they've been like, make it bigger, make it bigger, make it bigger.
But they do have an actual physical car at the show. I mean, that was part of a whole thing with Toyota, actually, because Subaru and Toyota are you know, co-joint owned. So they had a bunch of new, like a Yaris GR things, I think, going on.
Yeah, those are awesome.
Yeah, I haven't. Motor One covers that. There's a big thing at article on Motor One for all that kind of stuff.
I still love the Toyota CEO doing donuts and drifts in the GR Yaris. One of the best ever.
Right on. Akio? Akio,
yep.
Toyota? Right on. All right. So anything else we want to say about this?
No.
Okay, let's move on. So like you said, it's a little bit of a light news week this week. So the other bit that we have is VinFast, the new automaker out of Vietnam, is planning on building a factory in the U.S. No word on when that's happening, but they have already have a headquarters in Los Angeles, and they're saying that they'll have vehicles for sale by the end of the year. Now, they weren't on our list of new vehicles coming in 2022, and I'd be surprised if they can actually deliver because that's pretty tight timeline and just like a lot to do, you know, for a new automaker.
We need to talk about their budgets really quick
and their name, but we'll do that first.
Yeah, right.
Budget first. Like Jordan, would you like to explain where every penny of their budget went this year?
Celebrities.
Yeah, celebrities and every single flat surface in Las Vegas.
CES was essentially sponsored by VinFast.
Really? Okay, cool.
Every building, like these giant, like our hotel, we had like one of the, what were we in?
Our hotel was not even an official CES hotel, and it had giant VinFast advertisements on it.
Yeah, but like on the outside, like 40 stories of it were VinFast. I mean, it was insane. So they spent so much money on this. They flew Shmi over, Supercar Blondie, all these big celebs in the car world to show all their models. They had two. They renamed them entirely.
Yeah, so this picture right here shows E36.
It's not called that anymore.
Yeah, so they had E35 and E36, I think, which I think someone was like, listen, that's BMW nomenclature sort of.
Right, you can't do that.
Yeah. So they renamed them. So the one in the picture now is the VF9. And they made it really simple. It's VF5 through VF9.
But then they unveiled 5, 6, 7.
5, 6, 7 at CES, yeah.
Right.
So now they have 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. So, yeah, now we have five cars that...
I mean, all accomplish the same thing.
They're all CUVs. They know the American market, that's for sure.
Right. Let's see. So...
Well, what do you guys think about the battery leasing model that they're going to be using? Because it's not going to work. My initial instinct is it's not going to work here in the U.S.
It didn't work for the Smarts. Remember the early ones? They all just walked away from their contracts because no one's like, you're not taking my battery back. I bought this car. You know, I'm the third owner. Like, good luck trying to get this from me.
Right. Hey, so like a little spiel, just laying out the reservation system and all that kind of stuff for VinFast for this. So if you don't take Kyle's advice about never putting money on a reservation, VinFast is offering an early bird reservation program where you can put a refundable $200 deposit on its VF8 SUV before the 5th of April and get a $3,000 voucher towards a vehicle purchase. The VF8 is the company's two-row SUV, and it starts at $41,000, but that's without the battery, which you have to lease separately, like we just mentioned. The three-row VF9 has a similar deal. You put your $200 down, and it gets you $5,000 off the car, but it starts at $56,000. So, I don't know. Do you think Americans are going to pay this kind of money and lease a battery from a new company with no reputation that nobody's driven yet before the end of the year?
They will. Oh, I don't know about the timeline. People will buy them. And I think they're going to have a great ownership experience. This is not like a startup. They have money. They've been building other stuff. I mean, Vietnam is, this is a huge company already over there. They're just branching into cars, is my understanding.
Right.
They're also toying with a battery swap situation because one of their executives has been messaging me on Twitter, like, do battery swaps work? So I think it's early days, but they're great. They seem like nice people. But
sure.
Why do we need five CUVs at launch? Like, let's just get one or two really good cars, dig into those, and then expand. I didn't see the need why they needed to unveil all these new cars.
Well, one for every budget, you can only sell so many of the
Halo product. This has been proven by so many people.
Right.
Lucid's doing it. Tesla did it. It works. Make the one everyone wants. Give yourself, this elusive high price. It's a good thing when people think your car is expensive, because then when it becomes cheap, they feel like they're driving an expensive car. Like, make it attractive, make it sort of this desirable product, then bring it downstream. It's not rocket science anymore.
Right. I think VinFast sees itself as a good, like a value proposition, because so full size three row VF9, $58,650. Oh, that's the euros on that price.
Yeah, but it's still going to be way less than an iX or an e-tron, and those don't even
Model Y even, right?
Yeah. So the thing is, we really need more electric SUVs, not CUVs. We need big honking electric things. We want Rivian R1S. We need an electric Suburban. These are the vehicles that people buy in
BMW
America.
IX.
Five big cars. Oh,
what was that?
Hello. The VF9.
Sorry, my bad. I need to mute that. There you go.
Yeah, VF9.
It looks so good. I mean, it's designed with Pininfarina. Like, they have a lot of things right. It's just what's going to happen with the
logistics. We just have no clue. But at the end of the day, we need more big SUVs like this, because IX, no three rows, awesome car. But it's the largest sort of SUV electric you can buy. Model X, of course, right up there. But that sort of slopes down in the back and you lose a little bit of trunk space. So we need boxy things. I get they're not great on range, but let's make them.
So I think we're going to get a Cadillac Escalade thing, but that's probably, you know, at least 2 years, yeah, 3 years
away.
Buy
the Escalade electric or the 600 and something horsepower V. That sounds amazing, because that's what I would get.
I would go. The electric's going to be amazing too. That's going to be quicker. It's going to be. It's got the Hummer
and supercharged V8. That thing rips. Did you see that thing launch? It like pulled a wheelie practically. It was awesome.
If it's like the Hummer EV will pull a wheelie, they had to program that out of it.
That was cool.
So that's going to go under the S. Well, I don't know if they're going to have the three motor version of it, or they might have just like the Silverado EV version of the drivetrain with two motors, which is still.
I hope they give the spicy one.
You don't think they'll make a three motor Escalade?
No, I hope they do. I think people want that stuff. The new Escalade looks amazing. You black that thing out, you know, you can get, what's it called? The Sport gives all the black trim. You get great driver assistance, great night vision, augmented reality display. Like I said, one of the best sound systems of any vehicle. Thing is rad. It just needs supercharged V8 or crazy electric system, in my opinion.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's coming.
Someone said the Hongqi ES9 is for me. It's actually for Dominic, because this is his type of vehicle.
I could tour in that. I think that would be a great touring vehicle. I think pull up the Slidell, Louisiana, or someplace, and the big Hongqi.
Pull up to a barbecue restaurant in that thing, and you're Chinese Hongqi.
Yeah,
that's great.
Have all the gear in the back, and all the musicians loaded up in there. That'd be great. All right. So, anything else about VinFast we want to talk about?
I'm excited for him. I just think they need to make something.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, y'all have a lot more confidence than I expected that you would. But you saw the vehicles up close. I haven't seen them up close.
Vehicles look amazing. They're right for our market. They did their research. It's going to be a hit. It's just, can they make the damn things? We just don't know.
Right.
And also, they said they're building a factory in the U.S., right?
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
And Germany. U.S. and Germany.
Okay. So that's a lot of money. That's a lot of. Is it? I guess the Vietnam government's probably involved in this, or is this all private money?
Owned by Vin.
I wonder if it's like the Thai restaurant thing, where Thailand wanted a good impression of the world, of the world to have a good impression of Thailand. So they basically funded everyone's Thai restaurants, and that's why they all look the same and have the same menus. Did you know that?
I never heard anything about that.
Yeah, I'll send you a link. Our friend Sam, who works for Wendover Productions in Aspen, great YouTube channel, just did a whole thing on this. And it was like a whole PR move from the government to put Thai restaurants everywhere.
Oh, interesting.
Hmm. Yeah. That's why like every small town has one.
Awesome.
Oh, that's Vingroup, owned by Vingroup. So
that's Vietnam we're looking at?
I know nothing about Vingroup, but apparently a large organization.
They make like washing machines and stuff.
Wow, so, is that?
They've been around and stuff.
Man, that's a pretty industrialized looking city. That's crazy.
So,
wow.
Oh, wait and see. They got some money by the look of it.
Yeah.
They were all over. So I hosted a mobility event end of last year called Move. And again, they were massive sponsors of that. They were doing the keynote. So I presume that's part
they're
of the
sponsorship. They're just spending all the money.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we can't take any of it because we don't accept money from automakers. I mean, maybe inside, but not out of spec. We can't.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, we don't. Well, through the usual advertising things or whatever. But
yeah.
All right. So what else do I have on this? I don't really have anything else except the cheap Volkswagen ID.4 is coming this year in the $35,000 range, right? But that's
not on those wheels.
That's a smaller battery. Yeah, that's the gradient wheels.
No, we don't even get those wheels in our market. Those are the 21s. They're Euro only.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. They did also mention, I think I read somewhere this week, Volkswagen of America saying it's going to have a different center console to suit the US market. And I can't for the life of me think what the cultural differences that separate us about why you would find the center console of the ID.4 so, you know, just put you off from buying the car. Yeah, like
what they're going to do is put four giant window switches in there.
No, I thought you were going in a different direction.
Cup holders.
Four giant cup holders.
That too. But I think
maybe that's it.
It's got to fit like big gulps.
Right.
In order to be, you know.
So that makes sense.
U.S. approved.
I just think everyone's complained about the window switches. They're just, you know, those blind people calculators, like the ones that have these huge buttons on them. I think it's going to be those, but in window switch form, right in the center.
There you go.
Car.
That might be it. But anyway.
So, yeah, see, so we were thinking that once they started making the ID.4 here in a Chattanooga factory, which they've already turning out, you know, they've been turning out examples and pre-production versions of the Yeti 4 there for a while now. But once that finally gets online for consumer consumption, that the price would come down a little bit on the ID4 all-wheel drive. But that is apparently not the case with the big battery. The price is going to stay the same, but this will come in under it with the smaller battery, because they'll be building that there as well, and we'll have that one on our market. That I don't think we have the smaller battery here yet, right?
No, we don't. But soon. I tested the smaller battery in ID3, and it was great.
Okay, so that and yeah,
it had
anyway, that'll
a
bring
more aggressive charging C rate than the big battery.
Oh, really?
Yep, because it did 132 kilowatts, which is the same speed the new big battery does with the current or new software. It just had the smaller pack.
Right on. And it's looking at that. So, yeah, that'll be around $35,000 neighborhood.
Yeah, that's what they promised with $35,000 out of Chattanooga, localized production right here in the U.S. Been to that facility, amazing place. Yeah. And you guys know, we both are huge ID4 fans. Mm-hmm. It's a great car.
Yeah, I like that. Yep. I could see that factory too. That's one of the few.
I think they really need to stick to the $35,000. They can't go higher than that. It's got to be at least a $5,000 price difference, because you're going to get a significant range hit. You know, going from an 82 kilowatt hour pack to a 62 kilowatt hour pack, that's 20%. You know, so if the ID4 has about a 250, 260 mile range now, you're talking just a touch over 200 miles, maybe around 210 EPA range rating. So, you know, at 210. It's not bad, but price-wise, you have to, you know, if you're going to take that drop, don't forget winter. Now you're talking 150, 160. You know, they got to hold the line at 35.
$35,000. They could even have it at 180, 190 EPA. I think they'll sell everyone they can make, in my opinion.
What are the imports?
It's got to start at a two. I think once the EPA, you and I and a lot of our followers are so – you know, we understand range and we understand your daily driving routine. How often do you drive more than that? But the average ID4 owner is going to be for a new to electric mobility. If that EPA range rating doesn't start with a two, it's going to scare the hell out of people. It's got to eclipse 200 miles.
Okay. I would be surprised if it does.
Sounds like we're betting more donuts.
Because it's 240 right
okay,
now.
Okay, jelly donut, Kyle.
So, Ken van Schindel on Facebook pipes in and says, especially when the Equinox is coming in at 30K. So, yeah, fall of 23, you know, $30,000 Equinox, which is a pretty decent size.
We'll see, because even Bolts were $10,000 more than that. Yeah. Right.
We don't know.
Right. Well, Volts are now back down to 34, so they're going to be replacing the Bolt if they keep making it by the fall.
What's the difference between a Bolt EUV and an Equinox?
Equinox is bigger, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
And then the Blazer's coming in as well. That's a little bit larger than an Equinox.
Let's just have them make something.
And we don't know the range on the $30,000 Equinox. Chevy might come out with a tiny battery and say, okay, for $29,900, you get the 60 kilowatt hour battery pack that's 175 EPA range rated. But if you want the 80 kilowatt hour battery pack, you know, now it starts at 40. So we don't have information about the Equinox on exactly what that $30,000 version is going to be. But
that's a good point.
Hopefully, I'm currently watching a Nissan Leaf give out parking tickets. Because we use these Nissan Leaf parking ticket guys, and he's got his little yellow flashers on, like he's so important in his Leaf.
That is awesome. Like, you know, drive around the university parking lot and give tickets or do whatever with vehicle. Like,
yeah, he's
awesome.
Just put ticketing people on the street. They use them in town. They have all the license plate readers on them and everything. And it's already like the most hated electric car. So may as well have the most hated job with the most hated electric car. Not to say I hate the Leaf. I'm just saying generally.
Right. They'll turn them into tow trucks soon. not getting enough ticketing hate.
Yep.
What's the what do you pay import tax wise to get the cars in from Germany at the moment? I presume there is an import tax for Euro cars.
We don't really think about it like that. Nope.
Okay.
They're just priced as is, and we just pay that.
And yeah, we don't see that. Yeah.
Sure. But so as you say, domestically made. The batteries will be made by SK On. Rather than the LG packs that are in the Euro cars. So there's loads of reasons why domestically made, all the parts will be sourced locally on US soil. Hopefully that makes the whole thing a lot cheaper. 35 should be really achievable in $35,000.
Right.
Very achievable.
Right, but there still has to be, you know, they still have the rest of the market to worry about. They can't, you know, overprice themselves and you know, lose out to the competitors who are offering better value.
I think there is some spicy magic or special magic, not spicy because it's a pretty mundane car, in the ID4 that justifies a slightly higher price tag.
It feels like it's just a beautiful car to drive in, ride
in. Exactly, you know? It's just you get in there and it's like, oh, okay, this kind of makes sense.
Personality.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. But then you get into like any GM product that's not like their nice stuff, and then you go, ooh, why is everything like this?
the old Bolt EVs. The Bolt EVs are so much nicer now once you start making it again. But originally it was like
nicer. I like the Bolt. The Bolts handle really well. There's a dude who has an auto-crossed out Bolt. He took it to the Holley event. Remember that? It looked so good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I can't wait till they start making it, because I do really like to get alone and have one for like a couple weeks, just to like bomb around and get a good feel for it.
Take it to a track day.
Yeah, we don't have. Oh, we do have a track up in South Georgia. They have like a.
Take it to Atlanta Motorsports Park. You could road trip up there.
Yeah, that's true. All right. Hey, the right-hand drive Tesla Model Y. It's been spotted in the UK, and I believe that's coming to. Your neighborhood's pretty soon, Martin. Any excitement about that over there?
Oh, loads of excitement. I have two friends that have got them on order. I think it's just long range, not performance, that arrives first. But yeah, there's versions in the country, which we're really excited about. The ships would come into Southampton, which is about 20 minutes, 25 minutes that way. And if anyone watching this has got one on order, go and get one from Southampton. They come off the boat. Ask for a dusty one, by the way. Don't let them wash it first, because the cars will come from China, so they'll be in good nick. But don't let the... don't let the kids they have wash these cars or prep them chuck a bucket of dirty water over them. So
that's the case for any new car. I always say leave the plastics on it. Do it, and then you know, take care of the paint. They always come with imperfections anyway.
Right. Yep.
That's if you care about it.
So. Leave it. So if you're going to go get one from Southampton and they say, oh, it's not ready yet, give us half an hour. Well, no, give me the dusty one and go and get it. We're very excited about it. I've got two friends, like I say, that are expecting theirs first week of February, probably. So they'll come from Giga Shanghai. So it'll have the new AMD chip inside it to make opening up the apps when you open up YouTube or et cetera. Be nice and snappy and whizzy. It'll have the new 12-volt lithium-ion battery, which isn't a 12-volt lithium-ion battery. I think it runs at 15 volts, which is why on the UK Tesla configurator for the Model Y now, if you can't get it specced with the tow kit, there is simply a box that says... will be offered as an aftermarket accessory later this year. Come back to us when we've sorted it.
Because it's only rated for 13 or 14 volts. And
So I think the new lithium-ion 12-volt battery is a 15-volt, and I think that the tow kit operates, as Kyle says, at a lower. So I think they've had to be like, right, we can't factory fit it. We'll deal with it later. It's not a big deal. It's not like the Nordic countries that towing is a massive deal. It's not a deal breaker. So very excited about this. Yeah, as soon as I have a friend with one, I'll let you know that they're in the country and being driven. Super exciting.
Martin, the question is, if MG can't fix your water intrusion problem, will you be rolling up in a Model Y soon?
It suits us absolutely perfectly. Because we've got a young family, and I've never owned a Tesla, and I need to get it out of my system.
Okay.
I don't know if you will get it out. It's kind of like once you have one, it's hard not to have one.
Yeah.
There's so many little things.
So Tesla's been doing very good in the UK. I think the Model 3 was the number two selling car in the UK.
Over the entire year. Yeah, it was number one in December. And the number one was a car that cost a third of it. It was the Vauxhall Opel, as it may be called where you are, Corsa, which is a small city car that costs... $15,000. So to come number two over the year is incredible. We can't wait for Model Y. So many people I met at Fully Charged, because Tesla it's quite a funny story. The Fully Charged live event a couple of months ago, Tesla UK weren't ready to show off a Model Y, and so someone from Germany just drove across and had it there. And so the Tesla Owners UK, who are really, really good owners club, put it sort of front and central. And I don't think that went down massively well with Tesla, because it looked amazing, and it could have been them. As we know, Tesla don't do car shows. They don't do anything like that, which is a real shame, and I get it. But yeah, the Owners Club just brought one across from Europe and put it on the center of their stand. And of course, it was the center of attention. Everybody wanted to see a Model Y up close, even in left-hand drive. But right-hand drive versions will be driven in the next couple of weeks, which we're super excited about.
So in the US, you know, we're really big on crossovers over sedans. Sedans are like passés. But in the UK, what's that like? So will a Model Y be bigger than the Model 3?
Only because I think we have been so starved of this car. And remember, we're starved of any new S and X's. So no new S's and X's last year in the last 12 months. Oy. No new S's and X's for the next 12 months. If you order one now, it'll say due 2023. We are so starved of new Tesla stuff. All my friends in the Tesla Owners Club in the UK want one simply because it's the only thing they can get to satisfy their... their need to play with new toys, and so it's the only new thing you're going to be able to buy. So yeah, if you don't want a Y especially, give it 2 months or give it 4 weeks, and hopefully it will drive down the price of Model 3s. Model 3s with 10,000 miles are going on used car sites for more than new ones.
Wow.
That's stupid, because we can't get new Model 3s for so long until Berlin opens up. And even then, they're not going to make right-hand drive versions, are they? So, yeah, if you want a Model 3, don't buy one now. Wait until everyone who owns a Model 3 sells it and gets a Model Y, and then you can have theirs a little bit cheaper. It won't be cheap, but it'll take the price down a bit.
Right on. So, all right. So that's all I have for the show. I don't know, anyone have it? It's a little earlier than we usually do it, but anyone have anything else they want to throw?
It's supposed to be 1 hour. And now we're at 1 hour 20. And that starts to feel early, which is we need to start getting it back to 1 hour.
Okay. So I have something that's going to be coming up this week. I had announced like a month and a half ago that I was going to be doing the Lucid Air 70-mile-an-hour range test for Inside EVs. That got delayed because we had bad weather. Then it was the holidays. Then I got COVID. So it's just been – we've had this scheduled like 3 times and just haven't been able to do it. Hopefully nothing's going to happen between now and next Wednesday, because that's when I'm planning on flying out to Arizona, picking up a car from their Casa Grande factory, a production car, and doing the Inside EV 70-mile-an-hour highway range test on a Lucid Air Dream Edition range with 19-inch wheels. I won't have the video up of the range test by the time we do the podcast next week, but I'll be able to talk about it. So, we'll chat about that next week, and see, how far it goes. Now I'm figuring it's not going to get near the 520-mile EPA range rating.
Not yet.
Lucid uses the, EPA five cycle range test like Tesla does, and a few others, Rivian, Polestar, I think Audi uses it also. We've found on Inside EVs that the vehicles that use the EPA five cycle range testing, they come up short of their EPA range test when we do our 70-mile-an-hour highway range test. The companies that use the two cycle method, we typically are able to match that or even sometimes best it. In the case of Porsche, we crush it, but Porsche is a unique with the Taycan. So we'll see. You know, it's EPA range rated at 520 miles of range. I'm thinking somewhere around 450 is where I'm going to end up with, but who knows? Let's see. But we will be able to talk about it next week.
Good luck doing that.
Something to look forward to.
It's going to be a long, boring day. And I also want to do a couple more DC fast charging tests.
Yeah.
I want to charge it from different states of charge. So in one day, I'm going to get up super early. I'm going to DC fast charge. I'm telling them to basically give me a car that the battery is very low state of charge. I'm going to do the full DC fast charge recording, say from 20% to 100%, then start the range test so the battery's nice and warm. And then when I'm done with the range test, we'll be down to zero. I'll be able to record another DC fast charge test. I might do a 0 to 100 on a 150-kilowatt DC fast charger, because the last time I did the 0 to 100 on a 350-kilowatt DC fast charger. So this is going to be like a 16-17-hour day for me.
The big question is, did they adjust the charging curve since the last time you tested?
Yeah, I'll ask them. They had said that they're going to be doing software tweaks constantly, you know, right. And maybe they have, but I will.
Then I think we need another 350.
Another 350. I hope that's the case, Kyle, because I'd rather do another 350. It'll charge a little bit quicker because that's going to be the last thing I do at the end of the day. And I know, I mean, this is going to be a freaking long range test. You know what I mean?
Their charging situation, it sounds like the car has a pretty small thermal capability when it comes to high power DC charging. You know, when you size your cooling systems, they could go like 10x and get probably better cooling. So the 150 kilowatt one will be interesting because we can see, will the car dynamically say, hey, I'm only getting 150, let me let you charge faster and longer? Or, yeah, because what we want to know is, did your charging session derate due to temperature or programming? And right. We just don't know because it's one data point.
That's why it would be cool to do the 150 also, you know, and but I also want to do the start at 20% and do the, you know, 20 to really get, because I want to get a clear picture of 20 to 80. So many of our followers ask us 20 to 80. They're like, I don't want 0 to 100. Nobody's going to charge that.
And they're right for their own window.
Yeah, I know. Right. I know. But 20 to 80 kind of seems like, or even 10 to 80. 10 to 80. We got to decide on that. 10 to 80 or 20 to 80.
But it's, I think 0 to 100, and we can just log the theoretical max.
Yeah, but as you know, it changes. If you plug in at 10%, and it's
all temperature related.
The curve isn't going to be the same from 10 to 80 as it is from 0 to 80.
It's a theoretical max curve. And then you should be able to, depending on thermals, reach this peak if we can do it right. And that's why the 0 to 100 works for us on some cars that don't derate due to thermals, like e-tron just sits there. Yeah. But we don't know if Lucid Air is one of them. I do know, though, if you plug in on a colder battery pack at 20% state of charge, it means that it still might taper a little bit earlier because you still need quite a bit of heat in the pack for less resistance to get your max curve. So it's this fine balance of just nerding out. And honestly, at the end of the day, it's like, how much do we really chase this? But I think your testing method that you're going to go in there with is the best case single day scenario that anyone could ask for. And I'm certainly waiting for the results, like biting at my fingernails here. Can't wait to see how the car does, because it's either going to be amazing or not impressive. And we just don't know.
Yeah. All right.
Well, we should find out next week on the show. I should be able to chat about it.
Yep. So tune in next week. That brings us to the end of our show today. If you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EVs Forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up. If you're watching us on YouTube, that really helps us out a lot. So we appreciate those thumbs up. Don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. You can follow Tom Logney at Tomalog. That's with two M's. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily. Kyle Connor is at, it's Kyle Connor. Jordan, what's your Twitter?
Jordan_Schieffer.
Gordon_Schieffer. And I'm at Dominic_Y. Click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications. And we'll see you all again next week. Ciao. Go.